welcome to the first 7-inch club big time episode number 20. We did it, 20th anniversary. We are here. This is the podcast where we go over some old records by old bands that didn't make it too far in their career. They had a 7-inch or two, dipped out, called it a day. Maybe it was a side project. Hey, who knows? But either way, time has forgotten them. But we haven't. We are here to alert you to these old dusty bands and whether or not you should go back into those record bins and pick up these records. I am Mike, and with me is Scott.
You ever listen to like a podcast or watch a video or something where it's not necessarily about the genre, but every now and then it'll touch on it, and they call it hardcore? Hardcore,
like yeah, two words. Yeah.
You think that that's regional, or you think it's just like these are because of the internet? You could literally be in the scene for about 10 years and never have heard the word said out loud unless you go to see like Madball or Slapshot or something. Yeah. We probably say it every three words.
I don't know, man. I always thought it was just like lames, like people that weren't involved, because everybody, yeah. I like normal people would just say hardcore, but
yeah,
you know, I think every once in a while I would see it spelled like that on like a flyer or something. Mm-hmm. It's just, so I don't know, but I think I mean I even remember that, you know, everybody, I don't know if everybody had it, but in Connecticut and New York, you would make the X with the CTHC in it. And there was even like a way to do that. And if you didn't do that the right way, you were a poser. So it was pretty cut and dry in Connecticut.
Yeah. Now, I saw that you were making questionable food for your Halloween gathering. Was this with people? Did you have people in your home?
No, every year me and my girlfriend, we each pick a movie for Halloween, and then we make themed dishes over it because we're old and we don't have children. And this is our Halloween fun, basically.
I am old and I have children, or a child. And we picked, this is strange, before we were ever even thinking about having kids, we picked the neighborhood we lived in because we had driven through it around Halloween, and it looked like when Eddie drives into Toontown in Roger Rabbit. It was like unbridled, like pumpkins and like animation. It was like there was literal animation on all the garages, and there was kids. It looked like a scene from like, you know, Hocus Pocus or something like that, where there was kids everywhere and people everywhere and adults walking around drinking beers like while their kids were trick-or-treating and stuff. I'm like, this is magical. This place is wonderful. And we moved in here, and it was like the place had been haunted the night before, and it was all gone. It's been gone ever since. Like, that doesn't exist anymore. Halloween died. And I still like it. I still like, I'm a Halloween dude. I'm like an 80s kid. So it's like, we do Halloween. That's like such an important marketing time of year. So it means it's important to us. And I really like, you know, orange and black things, whatever. And, you know, so I took my daughter out, and it was fun, but it was really like, we're squeezing like the blood from a stone at this point. Like, the old people are really excited to see a little kid come by and get the candy. But at 7 o'clock, it's done. I didn't see a single teenager out with like a stick with a bat or like, you know, covered in shaving cream and eggs or toilet papering or vandalism or cars on fire. There's just nothing going on anymore. And it could be where I live. So, you know, listeners, if it's still hell on earth at 8 p.m. on Halloween where you live, give me some hope. I really want to know that that's out there. I love that shit.
Yeah, I'm always curious about that because I've spent, you know, the last 20 some years more at this point in cities. And the last time I remember like a real Halloween, I was probably like 15 or 16 years old.
Yeah.
And it is like that, because anytime I see people that I know that have children post pictures on Instagram, it's like daylight out.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, that's it's just kind of lame. But and even in New York, like, because, you know, in the New York City, there's not really suburbs to go to. So they just do it like, I think you have to trick or treat in the day. And then like by nightfall, you have to stop trick or treating. So that's the only time I saw people trick or treating was going to like the Duane Reade and asking for free candy. But So actual adults with children out there, with teens maybe, that live in a suburb or a place far away from the city, from the temptations of the city, let us know if your teens are going out and throwing eggs at buses and shit like that at nighttime.
Yeah. I have a little old school border boss chat too. This is odd. This one's an oddball for me. And so we're done with Halloween now. We just wrapped it up. Thanks, Mike. We got it. We just did Halloween. So now it's time for Christmas. It's time for Christmas. Mm-hmm. And I don't really credit Mountain Dew with doing this very often, but they have one that's just gingerbread.
Huh.
I always think of them as being more like, you know, surfing dragons and, you know, why, you know, explosions and robots and gamer things. And this is just, this is, these are gingerbread men. And it says ginger snapped with a, an apostrophe D. It says do with the blast of artificial ginger flavor. So I'm going to check this out online. We're online right now. I'm going to check this out.
Oh man. This is something you bought already.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Okay. That's pretty bad. It tastes like, fans of soda will know what it's like to have accidentally left a bottle in the basement for like 2 years and you go to drink it and whatever chemical reaction has taken place makes it weird. It makes it kind of like fruity in a bad way. This like, this is like that right out of the bottle. I don't feel any ginger. This just tastes like old. So it tastes like an old Coke.
Does it have any trace of the dew?
You know, maybe that could be it. It's because I don't really like Mountain Dew. Like, I don't like Mountain Dew. I don't really drink it. Yeah. And even like the only one I ever liked was that Kentucky Fried Chicken, or sorry, KFC special that was like mango honey. It was like mango honey, which is awesome. I'm saying that out loud for the first time in my life. I'm like, wait, mango honey is a fucking great idea.
What color is this gingerbread Mountain Dew?
White. It what is the white. Fuck, man. It is actually like it's like spit white. It's like
fuck. That's fucking it's like a little, gross.
It's like a little off.
I remember Pepsi did that, like, you know, that spiced Pepsi that was basically gingerbread.
Yeah.
And it was like a pleasant Pepsi color, like a more reddish cola, basically. I don't think you would just come out with spit white. That's fucking nasty.
It's got a little bit of an extra, like a little bit of a beigeness to it. Like it's a puddle, you know, like it's the wrong Jesus kid Christ. In school is sitting out in the curb spitting into a puddle. And I got it.
Oh, God.
Oh, okay. That's
okay.
Moving along.
Moving along. I saw it. I watched Dune. I think yeah. I promised I would talk about it. I watched the Dune. It was pretty good. Yeah. It was, I think it was right down the middle, a great balance of like just unrelenting nerd shit and mm-hmm. stuff for regular people.
Yeah.
And I think that's pretty great because I wasn't expecting that because the movie starts, it starts kind of like the first one. I forget what he says, but there's like a monologue in the beginning or,
yeah.
And they talk about the spice and it's like, okay, this is like the first one. And then he's like listening to like, you know, a space future podcast about sandworms or something. And yeah. I'm like, oh boy, this is going to fucking suck. But that was like the only time they really over-explain something. And they do it a few times with the sandworms. Yeah. They really want to hammer home what these sandworms are. And it's outside of that though, there's no real training wheels when they're getting into like the terminology and shit. It's just like, if you don't know, you don't know. And that's that. And yeah. I commend them because that's a fucking crazy risk in the time of the Marvel Cinematic Universe to just be like, hey, man, we're going to be saying still suit and the Shai Hulud. And if you don't know what this stuff means, I don't know, man, you got to pick up a book. And I was also because I've never read the books. I was just always under the assumption that the reason everybody who was into the books hated the original David Lynch movie was because it like strayed far from the path of the books. But
yeah,
I mean, this movie was kind of just like the same beats as the other movie. So yeah. I assume it's the same as the book. So I was pleasantly surprised by that. The only big difference is this movie kind of ends when the original movie just keeps going because it wasn't pandering for 7 sequels. So
yeah.
That kind of sucks. Like, I like this movie. I didn't like it enough to be like, I'm counting the days until Dune 2 comes out. I felt kind of burned by it, but you know, I kind of like, I looked at the runtime and I like, once they get to the scene where he's about to fucking throw down with the Fremen, I just like, this is it. This is the fucking stupid climax of this fucking movie. But overall, no, I thought it was pretty good. I like, the only nitpicks I have are just like, I knew it was just going to look like a big blockbuster movie. It wasn't going to be like, you know, like as unique as the original one. And that checked out. And I just think it had that kind of Game of Thrones deal going where even the House of Atreides, who's supposed to be like, you know, they're supposed to be like the guys, the men, the fucking cool motherfuckers. Like, even their shit looked kind of bleak and dark. And it's just like, I don't know. You could have made it a little more regal. But again, I haven't read the book, so maybe it's like that in the book. But overall, I thought it was a pretty good movie.
I have read the books, but it's been a while. This movie is not really, it doesn't follow the book quite. The book starts off with the box of pain thing. Like, that's the first scene of the book is, you know, he meets the Reverend Mother and he gets tested. That's like right at the beginning, and neither movie does that. So I think the new movie is just covering the old movie. I think he's just like, I think this dude saw the Lynch movie. I was like, that's a little weird. Let's make it less weird, but bigger. And that's because it is. It's really just the Lynch. And even like the Baron, I can't remember this, but I don't think the Baron in the books is gross. He's not like a slime pervert. He's not like a this awful, like sluggish. He's like a dandy. He's like in the sci-fi show. He's like he's like a dandy, like flouncy ruler. You know, he's like a rich man and an asshole, but he's not like some sort of gorgon, like menace that's like weeping slime and like sucking things dry and all the weird toad shit they make him do. So I think that they just saw the Lynch movie and were like, let's make like a 2021 like epic, and we'll like really get like, you know, screwed and chopped with it. We'll like make it like really slow and menacing and strange. That's I have a bunch of little problems with it, but they're not real problems because I don't care. Because I really don't care. I wanted what they did. I wanted them to make a Sandy movie that was bleak and like bleached and huge. And they did it because this should be huge. It should be the books are huge. It should be huge. The only thing I didn't think was cool was the shields, because the shields in the Lynch movie are so awesome. They're so weird. Like I don't know how they did the old ones. I assume it's like early CGI, but it's really bizarre looking. It's nothing you would ever come up with. It's like they're walking around in chunks of amber, like crystals of amber or something like that. And it's really strange. And in this one, it's just like a VHS glitch. It's a really bad effect. It looks like Instagram. It looks like when you see the people like doing the blue screen thing on Instagram now that everybody does, where like somebody else is behind them.
I felt like that was like a right down the middle compromise thing where they're like, it's sort of a callback to the original ones, but it's not. It's a little more modern.
It's a callback to watching it on a VHS tape and having to track.
Yeah, pretty much.
And then the ending, which I don't think I'll spoil it, but the ending is literally them going like, tune in next week for more Dune.
It's very much an ending that you would shoot if you already had the second one in the can, which they don't. So it's just kind of like, dude, you can't make that much of an open ending when you have to wait 3 more years for the next one. Like, it's kind of a fucked up deal, but whatever.
And that boy is gonna hit puberty. He's gonna hit puberty someday.
That dude's like fucking 27 in real life.
He's gonna come back wide. He's gonna come back for the next movie all weird and wide, and it's gonna be like, what the fuck, man?
It's gonna be like when fucking Luke Skywalker came back and he was all weird.
The V-hold is all messed up on him. He's spread out.
Well, okay, this is not a movie podcast or a Mountain Dew podcast. It's actually a music podcast where we talk about old records that no one cares about. So this week we're talking about a band named Funeral and their 7-inch Cry of State Desperation. This is allegedly from 2003. There's no actual markings. I'm just going by Discogs. Mm-hmm. However, the record says it was recorded in September 2001. And if it was a struggle, if it took that long for this record to be pressed and come out, that's a spoiler alert. I don't know if it was really worth it. I don't know if it was really worth the time that it took for this this record to finally hit the streets. But either way, I didn't do much research. I'm assuming this is just a side project of all the people involved. Yeah. They had one other release. It was called the 16-song EP. And it was, I think it was like a one-sided 12-inch, and that also came out in 2003. This band was from Portland, and these were self-released. And so their whole deal is that they have Todd Burdett from His Hero Is Gone, probably more well-known for Tragedy, and he's in this band. And then there's a bunch of other guys in that kind of world of His Hero Is Gone and Tragedy. Simon Hay, who was in Bombs Away, and War Cry, I think, was probably his bigger band. Mm-hmm. He's the, I think he's the vocal. Yeah, he's the vocalist for this band, I believe. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some guy just named Frank, who I believe is the bassist for this band. Mm-hmm. He was in some band called Atrocious Madness, which I don't know, but he sang for that band. This band, I think, is like a lot of singers playing instruments for like, they're just like, hey man, we never get to play instruments. Let's make this band and let Simon sing. And then we're all
crusty hardcore.
Cause Chris, the other guy, Chris, he also sang for a band called War Machine and Midnight, which, not the famous Midnight, but a different Midnight. Yeah. And, And yeah, and then Todd unfortunately plays drums for this band. The guy from His Hero Is Gone, the guy you want to hear play, sing or play guitar, is playing drums in this band. And so there you go. Like I said, this was self-released. There's not much on that. I actually, in my mind, I didn't look anything up because in my mind, Tragedy is still a band. And I don't know. It says the last thing they released was 2018. So I think they're still a band. So the other guys, you know, it seems like they pretty much stopped in the mid-2000s, as far as I know. This one guy, Simon, he's in some band called Rope Ride that came out 2010. But yeah, it seems like these guys are just kicking around Portland. And that's about it for them. I didn't find anything. I'm sure you could find millions of interviews with Todd or something on the internet about him, but that's all the research I did.
I kind of just looked him up and looked at things that they did, because it's not totally clear. Like, this is another case where on a lot of the records these guys have done, they just go by their first names.
Yeah.
And Discogs is often a failure. I don't understand how its database works sometimes. But like Simon Hay, you know, this is a total highlight of how annoying Discogs is, because they show you that he's in Warcry, but they don't show you any records that he's on for Warcry. Like, there's no Warcry records on his Discogs, but then when you go to the Warcry Discogs, he's listed as a member, and he's on, yeah. I looked up, he's on some records. So what the fuck is, you have to click in, and then it's just, every page has kind of a different interface. Like, some of them have like the credits where they're little pictures of the guys, and some of them have the list, and some of them have, it's just real strange how they lay it out. I assume it's user generated or something, and I'm just an idiot. Yeah,
pretty much. But I don't think they were expecting Discogs to get this burly. And yeah. Obviously, by the looks of Discogs, I don't think they've really did anything behind the scenes since, yeah, you know, 20 years ago Discogs became a thing. So you're just kind of, it's like kind of like all music, or it's just collapsing on itself now.
Rope Ride's a pretty tough band name.
Yeah.
I didn't want to scroll past thousands of rodeo websites to figure out what it means, because that's all you find. But the cover has guys hanging. So Rope Ride, the word Rope Ride for being hanged, that's tough. I like that. Yankee Wuss, Chris Friedman's band, is like a crusty kind of like anarcho band with guy-girl vocals. I don't know if you know this, Mike, but I kind of like that. I kind of like it's like a little freak anomaly of my programming that I had this Paxton Quigley 7-inch when I was very young, and I, you know, it's just like, it just stuck with me. It's kind of like a squatter punk Mates of State or something like that. It just stuck in my craw. So the heavy hitters, though, are Frank Burkhard. He is known better for his zines, I think. He had a pretty well-known Lovecraft punk zine in Relier. I don't know how you pronounce that. Relier Rising. And he seems to really ride hard for old school conspiracy theories. I don't think he made it to the Trump era where conspiracies came to life and were dumb, because he's still after chemtrails and HARP and all that, you know, weather control, like all that kind of stuff. Dude, put that aside. That wasn't what they did. It was so much dumber. It was so much worse. He's actually really easy to find a few interviews with for his different bands, and I'll give him credit, because he just admits he doesn't give a shit about being original. He's like, I like these 80s fast hardcore bands, and I'm going to start 80s fast hardcore bands. That's what I like, because I like Discharge, and I want to sound like Discharge for the rest of my life. So Atrocious Madness sounds like that. All the bands he lists, it sounds exactly like that, except for like maybe a little better. They're pretty energetic. Todd Burdett, he's famous. But you said he's the drummer, and I was looking through his discography, and I was like, he's almost always a guitarist or a singer. So I was like, he's in a few one-off bands where he plays drums.
Yeah.
I was like, the only reason that's coming out is because he wanted to play drums. He's like, I want to be the drummer today. So he's putting out a record. He's stoked. But it actually looks like he played drums in Death Threat. So there's a lot of Death Threats. I don't know if this one is the real Death Threat. I don't really listen to
the one from Tennessee that predates the Connecticut one, but was not as famous as the Connecticut one.
Okay, so this is not the most famous one, but I mean, I listened to a little bit of it, and it sounds like he knows how to play. But this guy's obviously a lifer. That's about it. I didn't find any like crazy stories or anything really weird about this. Like, this gets brought up once in a while. Like, these guys were in Funeral or something like that, but you don't really see. Man, you should have been at that Funeral show where they drove a backhoe into the crowd or something. Like, nothing really happens.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't even know if these guys played shows. I'm sure they played a handful, but
yeah.
But yeah, this, like I said, this wasn't on a label. It was just self-release. So we'll just go into any kind of personal bits. And all I have to really say is a couple things. One, I've said it on this show, and I think I've said it on All Holes Filled before, but His Hero Is Gone was a game-changing band for me. And there was a minute where I really kept up on all of the His Hero Is Gone offshoot bands and, you know, the bands in their little circle of friends. And, you know, after a while, I just realized it was just a lot of bands that sounded like not as good as Hero Is Gone. So I just stopped. So yeah. I think I missed Funeral. I don't think I heard these guys back in the day. And that's fine. I probably did hear them and I probably forgot. It's, either way, it doesn't matter. But the other reason I wanted to do this is because every time I dip in and go on Discogs and find a record store to buy some 7-inches from, I've been amassing, like, kind of inadvertently, like a small collection of black and white photocopy punk hardcore music. And by the time it's, you know, it's just one of those things, like, it's like when you buy like $13 of Taco Bell instead of $7 of Taco Bell, and you're like, this was a bad decision. And that's that happens to me every single time I buy these records. I always have one where I'm just like, this was a bad idea. Like, I don't ever want to talk about this. And it's because I'm not experienced to talk about this stuff, I don't think. And but at the same time, you know, every episode we do, I want it to be a little different, because I think every time we do something a little different, like a handful more people check it out and they want to hear it. And we've been sorely avoiding this little corner of hardcore, because I don't think it's, you know, like I said, outside of His Hero Is Gone, just like the completely like best top of the heap stuff from that genre, I'm not really checking all those other bands. So. And they're not fun to talk about, to be honest. Yeah. We'll get to that, because we're going to be talking about them track by track, and I'm sure it's not going to be that great. But you know, I want to give them a chance. I want to give every kind of genre of band a chance, or, you know, kind of sub-genre of hardcore a chance, so we're not just talking about screamo and fucking everything else we usually talk about. So this is, you know, the test run for this type of hardcore. So that's why we're doing it. Scott, I'm sure you are not familiar with Funeral, though.
No, and, you know, to be honest with you, this is going to break up the podcast, but I fucking hated the name His Hero Is Gone when they first came out. I hated that name. I don't know what it reminded. A bunch of people bit it pretty quick too. There was like, I don't know. I can't summon any of them, but there was like a bunch of like almost identical type names, but worse and worse and worse. And there was a actually a pretty big metalcore band who I'm blanking on, Protest the Hero or something. There's a couple of them. But if you're writing a little sentence and Hero's in it, you've bitten His Hero Is Gone's name, and there's no getting around that. And you're a dickhead. And, I hated them. It made me think of like Rage Against the Machine or something like that. And I didn't really like Rage Against the Machine back then. Everybody does now, right? I think, but I didn't like them back then. And, you know, by the time I realized they were awesome, I was kind of busy with like, I don't remember what. Like trying to rip off Caven or something. I was just busy with other things. And I think Tragedy and His Hero Is Gone are totally incredible, but I can't really internalize it. That's too late. Like, I love it when I hear it, but I'm not an expert and I don't know anything about them, and I can't change that about my life right now. So I don't have any crossover with this, and I don't have, the only crossover I really have with like DB and this kind of stuff, Crust, whatever you want to call this, was we did the review of Bastard and some stuff like that on All Holes Filled, and I ended up kind of, that was all right. What you said earlier, the limiting problem is that the bands who are going to be good to talk about are not qualified to be on for a 7-inch club,
because they're the best ones.
Yeah, because they've done a lot of records and and they're well known, and when we can't talk about them, we can only talk about the guys who put out one record.
I think we're gonna dig deep into that and how I feel about that stuff once we get to the actual review, because I you know, I needed something to talk about over 6 tracks, and it's not the music, because music's not that you know, it's not that notable. But as far as the record, it's pretty simple. This was self-released. It's a front and back cover. It's not just photocopied, so they didn't completely cheap out. They did cheap out on the labels. It's just white labels on the record. There is a version that has actual record labels, so I don't know if they had a deal on like X amount with labels, and then they were just like, yeah, that's it. We got 200 labels. That's the variant, I guess. I don't know, but outside of that, yeah, there's a cover, and it's I don't know if this is a famous photo, but it's a bunch of army guys, a silhouette, a shadow of army guys walking. And there's like an ominous skull cloud looking over them, and it's pretty photocopied out. And You know, it has the Impact font, Cry of State Desperation on the bottom, and Funeral in a little more I guess a decorative font. So, you know, a little bold, kind of distressed font. And the back is just serving as the lyric sheet where you just get Broken Typewriter font lyrics. And they aren't, you know, they're not very complex lyrics. They're all about the government and how the government stinks and stuff like that. And you know, recorded at Studio September 2001. They do not say if it was pre or post September 11th, which I don't know if that was the impetus for this band. If they're just like September 11th happened, they're like, let's fucking get in the studio and make a new band. Mm-hmm. I want to play drums on this one. I don't know. You get who's in the band, and you get a contact, which is a P.O. box for Portland, Oregon. And this was 2003, so these guys didn't really have access to computers, but they did not want to be bothered with them. So if you wanted to reach Funeral back then, you're right in the dumbass P.O. box. But that's about it. It's definitely minimalistic, but even to this day, if you saw this, if this was brand new from 2021 and you saw this record cover in the back, you would know exactly what you were in for. And for that, it's a pretty good record cover.
You posted a batch of stuff maybe a month ago, I don't know, a couple weeks ago. And, you know, I was like, oh, this looks good. And this is one of the ones that caught my eye because, you know, even after living in this sort of a world for like 10 or 15 years now, I'm still so surprised when a band gets to just name themselves like Knife or Sword or Bats or something. Yeah. We came up in an era where everybody was always getting or allegedly getting like cease and desisted. If you started your band, some old hair band or like a barbershop quartet or something like that, someone from another country would come out and send you a letter saying you can't, you know, pay us money or you can't be this band anymore. And I don't know what they're doing differently these days. I would think it would be easier than ever to sue. I think you would just have an app that would sue bands automatically for having your name. But there's all these like coffins and like, you know, tombs and all these bands that just... How can you do that? How did you get that name? How did you just pull a name out of the dictionary and get away with that? And so I like it, but Funeral, like that's a sick name. Like Funeral is a sick name. Yeah. And just calling your band Funeral and posting a skull on the cover of your record is badass. But you know, even looking at this, this is really strange. But even looking at this black and white photo and this distressed font, I did not guess what this sounded like. I'm stuck in the idea of now these days, if you have the one word band name, if you're named, you know, Funeral, you should be Doom or Sludge or Death Doom or something like that, or even Weird Electronica, like you're like Lorne or something like that. And I wasn't picking this. If I had flipped it over, if I had gone to the second panel, I would have guessed it because of the typewriter font. But just looking at the cover, I was expecting something quite a bit different than what we ended up listening to.
Yeah, I gotta admit, sometimes the covers do trick me. There's another 7-inch I bought not too long ago. I want to say it's this band Ghidra, and I bought it because it's a Godzilla name, and there's a lot of bands that did not make it far that took Godzilla names, and that seemed like a death sentence. And they have like a real pro like illustration for their cover, and I was like, oh, that's probably like something interesting. And then I got it and I flipped the back and it's just like, you know, super punk rock, and it's just like fuck, we're never talking about this record. But maybe we'll see, maybe in the future we'll talk about it. Speaking of posts though, I forgot to plug the Instagram. Check out our Instagram, First 7-Inch Club. Those are all letters. I've been posting flyers once a day. It's getting some eyes on the Instagram, at least, probably not the podcast, but hey, it's small steps.
Great flyer today. I think it was today.
Yeah. The Voorhees Hatebreed flyer, Monster X flyer. It's my pride and joy, that flyer.
It's an absolutely ripped demon, a most muscular demon. Tune in for the most muscular demon.
So we'll get into the music. This is a 6-track record. It's not very long. It's every song is a minute or two, so you get a lot of bang for your buck. I think this was even 45 speed, so it was 45 speed because it was a 45 hole. So yeah, they're in a hurry. They fit 6 songs on it, and even though it's, you're not getting your money's worth time wise, you're getting your money's worth track wise, and I commend them for that. So the first song is called Behind the Doors of Government. We'll be right back. This is, so, you know, if you don't know what this is DB hardcore. I know they have strains of different countries where it comes from or whatever. I don't fucking know. I've read about it my whole life. I've never really learned. But this is fast two riff hardcore where one riff goes nee 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 nee, and then the other riff goes na 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 na, and then the song ends. And that's every song on here is that type of hardcore. This is a, I would assume, a live recording where they're all playing at once, and you can't really hear the singer. It's kind of, he's not playing guitar either, I don't think. So, I don't know, dude. Like, should I record it over again? I think every song was done in one take, and there was no, because he's not like a great singer. He's just kind of shouting. He's kind of shouting in like a dad voice almost, but, yeah, you're not doing anything else, man. You gotta get closer to that amp or whatever the hell you're recording out of to pick up your voice a little better, because it's kind of needs it. Again, I think I said it earlier, but it's very painful knowing the guy from His Hero Is Gone is right there just playing the drums when he could be singing for this band. Yeah. And it would instantly make them 3,000 times better. And he's not. He's just drumming away, not worried, because he's in many other famous bands singing where he doesn't need to do this. But overall, though, and this goes for every song, everything I say on every single of these tracks goes for just about every song, but this is what I would call good regional hardcore, or good even local hardcore, where back in the day when things were a little more separate, you know, if you were from Albany, you'd be like, oh yeah, I just played with this band from New Hampshire or Vermont called Funeral, and they're pretty good. And you would go, oh yeah, I'll check them out. But yeah. if you played with them and they're like if you heard them because you read a review and they're from California, you'd be like, I don't care, like that's too far away to really care. I don't really like, I'm never gonna bump into these guys. This music is not, it doesn't carry over to the next coast. I don't really need to ever listen to this. But if it's somebody in your pool, your kind of like extended pool of states that you border, you might be interested in them, but yeah, if it's out of your little time zone, I don't think you're going to give a shit.
So as I said, we did Bastard, and I think did we do 2DB type things? I don't remember. I think we did another one. Maybe I was just misusing the word DB a lot when we did Gizem.
Well, we did Tragedy too, because I never really listened to that Tragedy record. So
right. When I was young, I got an Earache or a Relapse comp for free, and it had Disgust and Horrific End on it. And I, you know, it was a bunch of death metal, and there was this song. I was like, man, that song was kicks ass. I was like so excited about this fast four on the floor song. So I was like, oh, I'm going to go buy that tape. And I bought the tape, and I'm like, whoa, these guys do this a lot. They do this over and over.
This is it. This is their trick.
This is what they do. Oh my God. I just got 15 tracks of an Horrific End over and over, but like less good. Like each version of it was a little worse. And, you know, when we did Bastard, what I realized is that, you know, the good bands from this genre have some exciting part in most songs.
Yeah.
Probably not always. They probably have some filler tracks, and they probably, because they enjoy, they must enjoy what they're doing. So sometimes they just rip it. They just do their two riff songs and rip it out. And for them, that's probably cool. But I think that the cool songs are the ones that have some sort of metallic part or like an exciting descending, you know, something that gets dramatic just for a minute. It doesn't have to be crazy. You just need to have about 30 seconds or even 15 seconds of something else to keep my attention. Literally anything. Any other part. Any other part. And these guys do it in this song, sort of. They do this little guitar pull-off thing. All of a sudden, the song stops and goes... And the way they play it, you almost expect it's going to go into this halftime thing. Like a... Dun, 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 pa, dun, 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 or something. I was like, are they going to do it? Are they going to do it? No, they do not. They do not. They go right... You know, we know in our hearts they weren't going to do that. They were going to go back to the first riff, and they do. And it's, you know... I just want to congratulate Mike, because Mike, you have the best rip of this record on YouTube right now. The sound quality is really bad in every other rip that I listen to. So you've upped the ante for all future Funeral rips. The rest of them actually sound like they're being played through like a 90s PC speaker. Like you didn't have Sound Blaster and you had to just route it through the PC speaker.
I'm usually in last place with these rips, because I'm using a record player that's not really meant to be ripping shit onto the internet, but I'm not going to buy all another record player, do a fucking podcast. So I'm very happy about that. But that kind of, so the second track is called Common Enemies. Yeah. to kind of piggyback off of the two things that Scott said. I imagine that it's really easy to be in one of these bands, and it makes me upset that, these guys would fucking just show up to practice and just be like, hey, I got a song. It goes like this. And it's like, okay, that's song number one. Let's get work on song number two. And it's just like in a practice, they probably have seven songs. And it's just like, fuck, man. And like, it's not, you can't hate on it, because it's just some people's brains work like that and other people's brains don't work like that. And I don't have a brain that works like that. And it's upsetting that I can't do something like that, where I could just be like, okay, I'm going to do a thing where I do the same thing 35 times and be content with it. I just can't. And it's upsetting. But these guys, that's their deal. They're just like, we got these songs, and they're taking about 7 minutes to compose. about the sound quality, this song sounds somehow worse than the last song, even though it's the same recording. It just sounds a little shittier. And it sounds like when like your needle is collecting dirt, but I don't think my needle is collecting dirt. I just think like, I think they recorded all these songs on separate days, the same technique, but it's just like, because it keeps on going up and down. But yeah, the song
faders are
like
all different. The faders are all fucked up on the board, man.
This song sounds a little worse than the rest of the songs on the record.
A lot of these bands have members who I don't know. I'm not a scholar, but I could have sworn some of them tend to live on the fringes of society, like actually live kind of punk lives and punk squats, anarchist collectives. Maybe living
speaking of that, not to butt in, but I didn't. I don't think I told this story on the His Hero Is Gone one. But one of the times I saw His Hero Is Gone, it was like they were late to the show because I think they were doing a tour. And so they're literally like pulling up to the show while like a couple bands had already played. And one of the guys, I don't remember which one, like gets out of the van and like puts a silk screen like right down on the ground and just starts silk screening shirts right there. And I was like, whoa, these guys are like the punkest dudes I've ever seen. And so I had like a couple His Hero Is Gone shirts that were just smudged because the ink wasn't fucking dried yet. And I traded them and I'm sure now they're worth like hundreds of dollars. But like it was definitely like the most, and they were dirty. Like they all looked like Pigpen too at the time, because I don't think they had showered that whole tour. So at one time these guys were definitely on the fringes of society, definitely pre-tragedy.
If they were real punks, it would have been a potato stamp instead of a screen print. But so there you go. They're very punk, and I would just expect them to be a little bit more boots on the ground with their politics. You know, like maybe have some clever ideas, but a very angry 12-year-old could write this song. Like legitimately a 12-year-old could write this song. And I know that that's part of the style sometimes. That's sort of the genre thing, is the smash to fuck the fucking system discharge thing or whatever. Like you're supposed to be kind of clunky with your words. But this is so broad. Like, don't they have any landlords to be mad at, or healthcare problems? Something to bellyache about that's kind of specific. It's like really fitting that these guys are from Portland, because this is like a Portlandia sketch. Like if they made a D-beat band on Portlandia, they could sing Common Enemies and it would be fucking funny. It would be like really funny that they're singing these lyrics. And then right at the end, they tease it. Right at the end, there's a tale that could be another musical idea. Like, oh, they're going to do it. They're going to play something different. But I already spoiled it. The song ends. It's the tail end. It just goes away. So they don't give you anything further. But yeah, I mean, you know, this is kind of the whole record. I'm like, man, you know, these songs are like, society crumbles and the government lies. Like, man, that's like Captain Crunch box or something.
Yeah, that's kind of why I just like glazed over the lyrics, because it's like they're really generic, and I just can't, like, again, just like I can't imagine being a person that is cool with just recording 10 of the same song. I just can't imagine being like, okay, well, these are my lyrics. They're you know, they're about the government and it stinks, and that's about it. Like, I don't know, there's nothing to that. So so the last song on the first side is called In Order to Maintain Their Status and Power. This song starts off slightly different from the rest of them. This is, they're playing a little higher. It sounds a little surf rocky, even, where you're just like, eh, maybe they're changing. Maybe surf rock. But no, it just goes back into the D beat. And this is where I just clicked that I had read, like, at some point in my life for a good chunk, 4, 5, 6 years, I religiously read Maximum Rock and Roll, like every single issue, front to back, because there was no real, the internet wasn't kicking yet. And you would read magazines from front to back, even if you did not give a shit. Yeah. And I would say, in my vast knowledge of underground music, I probably recognized about maybe 10% of the bands that were talked about in Maximum Rock and Roll. And because it's not, you know, it's never really my scene. Like, I just really like reading about stuff like that. And I would, you know, I imagined the other 90% of the bands that they talked about sounded like this band. Like, they all just sounded like Funeral. And I was never missing much. They are all just kind of like, when, you know, you would be like, oh yeah, this fucking, when Felix Von Havoc or whatever is like, yeah, this record's a ripper. It probably just sounded like Funeral, and I probably would have never thought it was a ripper. I probably would have just thought it was a normal record. But yeah, that's it for the last track on the first side for me.
I'm kind of the same way. Like, when I would read those zines, it was like a Key and Peele football player sketch. Just, like, you could be making up these bands. I wouldn't fucking know. And I don't know if I ever talked about this on any of our podcasts, but do you remember when MTV, I don't know if you might even, because you're like 1 year younger than me or something, like 4 years younger than me, but there used to be like Late and MTV, late night, like when Headbangers Ball would play and stuff in the early days, they would do a commercial where Santa was in a pit. And it was a really bad animation. That, okay. Yeah. And it was like, I think it was Agnostic Front or something like that. One of those bands. And it was really kind of like, I'm a child. I'm like 11 or something like that when this song. And I was like, that's fucking, what is that music? It was terrifying to me. And that's kind of, and then even when I got to be like 13 or 14 and I was reading some zines here and there, I was just like, man, these have got to be some scary ass bands. These got to be some, this is going to be some nighttime shit here. I'm going to stay away from these bad boys. I'm going to push back on something you said earlier. You said that you don't have the ability to write like these guys write, but you did write a song on the broken keyboard in my apartment. And I'm going to re-record that for the end of this episode. That's going to be our closing theme. You've written a gem. I'm going to let the people know.
Yeah, I guess I can be in one of these bands after all.
It's close. So you said like a few seconds at the beginning of this, they're doing something different. And yeah, it's very, very nearly an arrangement. The bass is doing something different from the guitar, and it's a little thicker. You're like, oh, they got an idea. Wait, they have an idea. What are they gonna do with it? And then the guitarist just gives up and starts following the bass, and it's a mm-hmm. okay bass line. It's kind of like don't do 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 or something. It's like a little like walking bass thing. And then they come back to that beginning and they expand it briefly by playing two chords instead of one. Two chords. They really rock the boat. They put a second chord in to the expansion, and I give them some credit for that, because that counts. That's all I'm saying. It's like somewhere on the song, do something a little bit more, and they did. So this is not a great song, but I think this might be their greatest song, because it has several ideas in it.
Yeah. So we're flipping it over to side B. The first song on side B is Inevitable Decay. This song sounds, again, different quality, different sound quality. This sounds like the best sound quality. They woke up early on on the Saturday after the Friday recording session, and everything sounds bright and great. So this is the highest recording quality, even though it's slightly different. The only other note I had for the song is I think this is the Circle Pit gem is this song. This is the one where the Circle Pit breaks out, and you can imagine, you can really visualize that Santa in the mosh pit MTV commercial to this song. This is where I'm really, really imagining that commercial.
Yeah. And you know, you might be onto something, because I feel like if they came into the studio every day and someone had been using it before them, this is the day they came this is the day they came in after Appetite for Destruction was being recorded, because this kind of sounds like this sounds like a sped up, to me this sounds like a bar rock song. It's kind of major key, and if you let your generosity flow, you could imagine this song as filler on Appetite. Like a filler song on Appetite, because they liked punk. They would do stuff like that once in a while. But you'd really be using your imagination, because there's no filler on Appetite for Destruction. It's all killer. But I also have this loose idea that a much, much earlier version of this genre, which I'll never listen to in this lifetime, probably sounds like this. I'm always amazed anytime I encounter some older traditional punk thing or oi thing, and it just sounds like AC/DC with choke singing. You know, it's like a lot of it just sounds like bar rock and pub rock to me. And so I can imagine there's some branch of post-discharge 80s hardcore that is just like this. It's like bar rock, but just really, really fast and heavy.
Second song on Side B is called Religious Victim. This song is probably the most different out of all the songs on the record. This sounds a little more skate rock, skate core, punk hardcore to me. This song sounds like they should be singing about ollies, kickflips, and stuff like that, and they're not. They're singing about how religion stinks. I know, big fucking surprise that they would think religion stinks, but
yeah,
they do. I mean, just for that alone, that the difference, and they're kind of easing back on the total DB onslaught that they're doing. It sounds a little more fun. Yeah. They're actually, not miserable guys. This is probably my favorite song on the record.
I like where you're going with that. I didn't think of that skate rock. I was thinking, yeah. I listened to this and I was thinking it sounded like a boogie riff or something. And, they don't do the disc part. They don't do the D beat part, really. It's not in the song. It's not present anywhere. There's a different beat. He's actually playing these guys are playing a riff and there's a beat. And I'm not a scholar of this genre, so maybe this is one of the six sacred patterns of disbandia. Like if you can form a disband, you get to flex on one song, you get to unfurl your hair and be a boogie rock band for one song per record. They get to this one boogie riff, and I've been saying do something different, and this is a be careful what you ask for situation, because I'm like, maybe go back to the D beat. Maybe there's even a guitar solo on this, and it's a real shame. It's a shame he tried that. But if you frame it the other way, if you say it's a skate rock song that they could open for XL or something like that.
Yeah.
Now we're talking. I'm changing my mind.
See, I'm just kind of looking at it a different way.
Yeah.
The last song is called Hatred and Fear. This is where all their ideas are. This is the song sounds a little crazier than all the other songs. I think they really went all out. I think this is the song where they're like, we got one last song left. It's called Hatred and Fear.
Oh, yeah.
And then everybody, all the punks are shaking their fists and chugging their PBRs. And they're red. This is the rager, man. This is where everybody fucking rages and spits beer and piss all over each other and fucking moshes and slam dances. This is the song because it gets like... I mean, it starts off and you're like, oh, this is just every other song. But then it gets like, oh, let's try this weird thing. And like, they're going, wheel, wheel. And they're just doing like, fucking dumb shit in the song. And it's, it's probably my second favorite song just because it's like they're really letting their hair down and having a little fun with it. But yeah, that's about it.
I love that we're in league on almost every song. Like, we've seen the same thing every song. Because this one, I was like, man, they opened up the taps on this. They're really going for it. It could just be because it follows, like, the last song was slow, and they get to this, and you're like, oh, it's exciting. And there's only one trick that you can do with, like, relentless punky music that I like, and that's to lean on one chord too long to make it almost trancy or something. Like, when you should be changing, just keep leaning on that one chord. You know, make it kind of hypnotic or something like that. Drony or whatever. I think they're getting there. These guys are getting there, but unfortunately, their songs are only, like, 1 or 2 minutes long. So that doesn't give you a lot of room to do your mini dope smoker. You can't do, anything of that level. But I think within the limits of what these guys are trying to do, it's a strong finish. This is like a strong finish of the record. Easily the dumbest lyric so far. But, you know, as we said, it's a 45. They were in a hurry. So they had to get it out. And they did. And, you know, this is a ripper. This is the ripper.
So, yeah, that's it. Those were the six tracks. Overall, my rating system, of course, this is 20, we're 20 deep. You've heard my rating system before, but just in case you are a new listener, just in case you are a D-beat warrior that heard somebody was finally talking about 2003's Funeral, Cry of State Desperation, my rating system is I'm going to either throw this record right in the trash, buy it from the bargain bin, buy it for full price, or buy it for collector's prices. And overall, even though we were just kind of ragging on it the whole time, this is the type of record that really makes me miss that 7 inches used to be affordable. Because this is the type of record where if I had paid $3 for this, you know, back when records were $3, I would have been like, because when I used to go record shopping, when I had a little walking around money on me, when I, you know, when I was in that perfect storm of having a job but living at home, so all my money just went to fun. And I would just like drop like $30 or $40 on 7 inches at the record store and have like a, you know, a whole new library of music, because like, you know, 40 bucks was like at least 10 records at the time. Yeah. So, you know, if I bought that, like if I bought this Funeral record in a whirlwind of a $40 spending spree at a record store, I'd be like, yeah, this is cool. This is like a cool record. Maybe I'll play it one or two more times, throw it in my record box, never think about it again. But now like this would be minimum $7 and I would be really fucking upset if I bought this, if I bought this record for $7, like, and it's kind of shitty that you can't be just kind of like a dumbass band, like, you know, a dumbass band that is in much more serious bands. It's like, hey, I play guitar in this band and I want to play bass in a different band and I want to play drums in a different band and blah, blah, blah. And I just want to put out like a self-released record real quick and have fun. And you can't really do that anymore. Cause you can, but you're going to make a cassette and, really starting to hate cassettes, man. We're talking about that on the Discord. That's like everybody's move now is like, oh, let's put out all this unreleased music on cassette. And it's just like, fuck, man, why are you doing this? It sucks. So it kind of sucks that bands are doing cassettes instead of 7 inches. So, this makes me miss the good old days of $3 7 inches and, not really having any risk. So, with that said, I can't completely throw this in the trash. I would say buy this on bargain bin if you are a His Hair Is Gone completist of that little realm of music. You may have heard this. If you haven't, pick it up. I mean, it's DB. It's not anything amazing or anything, but if you just wanna collect them all, this is, you know, this record's fine. Like I said, good regional hardcore. It's not gonna blow your dick back, but it's not gonna make you puke or anything.
Yeah, like if you bought like a Strife record and like a City of Caterpillar and like Statue and you bought this with it, you'd be like, oh, that's a nice change of pace. Like these guys just, there's a photo out there that you brought. This is an Albany photo you brought up recently where a bunch of Albany people are having an absolutely excellent time at a basement show.
Yes.
And it's notable because all the people in the main area are really happy to be there. Like one guy we know is triumphantly holding up a tall boy and like he's really smiling, more smiling than I've ever done in my life. I didn't want to name names because I think he might be a listener. Everybody's slam dancing. They're having a great time, but in the back, scowling, visibly hating his life and surroundings, this famous scene curmudgeon, Sean Duty.
Overnight Drive's famous Sean Duty. Yes,
he is there. He is so not happy to be in the room. He's not even looking at the stage. He's just crossed his arms and he's scowling. He looks like a meme. And that part of the photo is and always will be hysterical. But I hate the picture. I hate it because I know all these guys they're having a terrific time at this show. But I know they're watching some like dipshit street punk band. There's some. Whoever is playing is like U.S. Boogers or Suburban Rat
Boogers.
It's something bad. I hate the real names, the Suburban Rat Rotter, whatever you call this shit. I hate it. I hate plain hardcore. I hate street punk. I want some bells and whistles, and you don't get it with this stuff. Like, I don't live in the context of this music, and I don't want to. I don't want to know what makes you want to have a ripper of a record on your turntable. So I cheated and I passed this over to my guitarist who is a little younger and he actually likes everything that I don't like. He is a musical a musical astronaut who listens to all kinds of different stuff, but he also likes all the Gaps for me. He likes all kinds of hardcore I don't like. He said this sucks. So, so I'm right. and this is also another case where every one of the people in this band does this exact thing better in other bands. It's not like Redrum. Redrum, we said that, but I mean literally everyone in this band has another stencil font band that is cooler than this. And you know, like, so what is this? It's obviously they all want to play different instruments or something like that. This is like fun for them, but they paid money. Someone somewhere along the way paid money to put out this record, which is crazy because it's in the 2000s when records were like petering out as an opportunity.
Yeah, yeah.
The good news is that after a couple of long, boring decades, we're finally back in a world that may actually have a nuclear war. So this genre is perfectly relevant. This is totally, all these lyrics, everything on this record is totally relevant again. So I'm going to go one totally cool protect and survive poster out of five. That's what I give. It's one because I don't like the record, but I do like that, you know, that that like the 80s War Games shit might come back. We might die from it, but it's back. Yeah. You know, it's back.
It's
I
worth
like it.
Yeah. we're back, guys. We're back once again. We got to make one of these bands, and we got to start it off with a sample. The Do You Want to Play a Game? More Games. Yeah. We got to do that. That's got to be our new band. Okay. If you want to check us out, we're on Instagram at First 7-Inch Club, all letters. Or if you want to listen to these records on the YouTube, it's First 7-Inch Club. If you want to go old school, email us. You can do so for 7-Inch Club at Gmail. Either way, you could send some suggestions. Oh, I forgot to next episode. Todd from Australia sent me his band to talk about his old band. And he kind of did it yesterday, so I didn't get it to Scott. So next week we'll talk about Todd's old band, and Kyle sent me a suggestion for a record, but it was it's like a minimum $30 7-inch. That's probably never gonna happen, but yeah, but you know, we'll see. Maybe it'll slip through the cracks and come up cheap somewhere. But you know, thanks guys for the recommendations.
Maybe we'll review the fucking Wu-Tang $2 million record while we're at it. Let's come out of pocket for this thing, man.
We gotta get that Patreon going, then we could talk about all the $30 records you guys want us to talk about. Tell your friends. That's the important thing. We're at that level where you gotta start telling your friends about this podcast and say, hey man, there's a different hardcore podcast out there besides Axe to Grind. There's another one now. There's a second one. And it's pretty good. There's two now. So tell your friends. Until then, we'll talk to you next week.
We can even name the band Whopper. This is awesome. Let's do it. By next episode, we're going to have six songs.
There we go.
By Whopper. Called Government Stinks.